Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. Chuck Bonnywell, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, two straight up.
That's right. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, and also HappyTrees.co. Once again, we're broadcasting live from the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show World Headquarters, only upstairs, not downstairs, because we're having work done in the basement. Hey, we're glad to have...
That guy's my great-great-great-grandfather.
That's right. We talked about that before. That's right. We're going to have with us later on in the show, actually, some sound from Ron Hanks, who was at the Mike Lindell-sponsored election summit.
In Missouri.
But we're starting off with Mark Tapson. He's a Shulman Fellow on Popular Culture with the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Had a great column in Front Page Magazine saying feminists fear and loathing of their own sons. Hey, Mark, thank you for your time and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks to both of you for having me.
So
tell us about your column.
It was sparked by a Huffington Post column, right?
Yeah, it was my column was sparked by reading a column in HuffPost written by a self-declared feminist, and the title of her piece was I took my 15-year-old son to see Barbie, the Barbie movie, because I'm worried he could become Ken. And the thrust of her article was that she is, like a lot of feminists, deeply concerned about the toxic masculinity of their male children. And so in her case, she saw that the Barbie movie, this summer Barbie movie, might be a great opportunity to take her son to see it with her to the theater. And it would give him, material to talk about in terms of raising him to be a feminist and to maybe exorcising the toxic masculinity out of her son. And it sounds a little like satire or a parody, but sadly it was deadly serious. So I wrote a piece kind of dissecting her arguments and talking about the damage that she's doing and that a lot of feminist mothers are doing to their sons because they have a literal fear and loathing of their own son's masculine nature, which of course is considered toxic today. Masculine, you don't ever hear about toxic femininity or anything negative about a female nature, but male nature is considered toxic. And of course, this is a false construct. But anyway, so my article was basically deconstructing and pushing back on her argument.
Well, as I was reading your article and you were quoting her article, I was thinking to myself, we need to call Child Protection Services wherever this woman lives and send them to rescue this child. I mean, can you imagine you're a 15-year-old boy? But I was telling you, we have a 12-year-old, right? And, this puberty can be a confusing time for any kid, male or female.
Yeah.
You've got all this going on. You've got peer pressure. You've got sports. You've got homework. You've got algebra. And now you've got your whack job of a mother taking you to see movies like this and lecturing you. I mean, can you
during the movie? During the movie, see there, son,
right.
After the patriarchy. Go. Well, Julie, in case you didn't know, she lives just down the road. She moved to Denver, Colorado, with her son, who's now in Denver Public Schools.
Oh.
So you wonder why who's moving to Denver these days? As it goes now, well, that's who's moving to Denver. Whack jobs like her.
Well, she says in the article, and she tells her son this, she inculcates her son with this kind of feminist nonsense that people are suffering today under the patriarchy in American society. Well, there's just, American society is not a patriarchy. But in any case, she says people are suffering under it. But in fact, the people who are suffering are sons of feminist daughters who are being lectured and hectored by their moms like this in many cases. About their nature and that they need to become feminists and then they need to, and that their own nature and their masculine qualities are toxic and lead to rape culture, and they're oppressive and misogynistic. Well, these are terrible messages to be giving your son. You know, if you look on the internet and look up how to raise your daughters, you know, you'll find countless articles about empowering them and elevating them and lifting them up. And you look for articles about raising sons, and mostly what you get is how to raise your son to be a feminist.
Right.
So the culture-wide implication here is there's something wrong with boys and young men, and we need to sort of wring that out of them and change them to make sure that they don't grow up to become rapists. It's just a terrible message. It's oppressive and abusive. So, you know, your idea of maybe calling Child Protective Services, not too far off the mark.
No.
Well, unfortunately, around here, Child Protective Services is about as abusive they get. If some of the recent articles about Jeff.
Yeah.
But one of the things she harps on, because I went back and read the article after reading your great analysis of it, because I said, man, I got to read
this. She's got to be exaggerating. She can't be that awful of a mother.
she complains that, you know, she has lost control over reproductive rights. And of course, you can abort in Colorado up to the time of birth, if not just slightly after. But another person pointed out, you're 51 years old.
Yeah.
You know, even if you could find a male who'd be willing to meet you.
Did 51. Well, you know, and you're right. That's a ridiculousness, right? And the column you quoted her as saying, you know, in a few years, he's going to have more rights than I do because my reproductive rights have been destroyed in Colorado, which is a lie. You know, and so she's telling her son's lies. Like you said, Colorado has, I think, if not the least restrictive, at least one of the least restrictive.
I don't see how you could be less restrictive.
Somehow say that he has, I mean, and you read this, and I gotta admit, it's as a mother of a son myself, it makes me angry. And as a mother of a daughter, it makes me angry because you're like, who is my poor daughter going to date? Right? Some guy who, I mean, because these, no wonder these young men, I mean, they talk about the suicide rate and the depression rate among kids. And I think, and this, I goes some of it straight to these whack job mothers who are, rather than accepting their children, right, for who they are, they have to try to twist them into what they think they should be. And that's, like you said, that's abusive.
Yes, her embrace, her, you know, very willing embrace of her treasured victimhood status is just complete denial of reality. I mean, she likes to think that she lives in some sort of a handmaid's tale dystopia, you know, where women are just treated like third or fourth class citizens. It's just insane. It's a complete rejection of reality. But, you know, there's a lot of cultural power to be had in claiming victim status. And so, you know, feminists embrace that, and a lot of so-called marginalized groups embrace that victim status. But, you know, to get back to something you said a moment ago, sorry, go ahead.
One of the great things was the her litany of virtue signaling. Oh. Well, you know, we went down to the black school and handed out a dime or something. She had a whole litany of how progressive she was and how he had to learn and so forth. And what's so funny is that, you know, as I said, I went to the article and then I wanted to see all the comments because the Huff Post is about far left as you get. They all hated her. Even the lefties hated her. They're calling you.
Yes. Yeah, I noticed that too, Chuck. I thought that was great, actually, that it seemed to me like the majority of the comments that I read did find her to be pretty insufferable and abusive about her son. And so I thought that was a good sign. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what it says about Huffpost readers, but I think it does say that a lot of people, you know, there's so many quote-unquote normal people out there who just reject all this nonsense, but they're kind of the silent majority, you know? And so a lot of times if you read the comments section under articles, it can be really encouraging. Of course, it can be discouraging too sometimes, but sometimes you're surprisingly encouraged by the voices of the quote-unquote common people. So I was encouraged by that. But, you know, and I didn't pick on just this woman just for fun, although I did have a little fun with it. But I went after her because she's representative of quite a few feminist writers out there who have written articles in the past several years about their deep concern, their anguish over having given birth to male children, and their fear that their child might grow up to be misogynistic or contribute to rape culture. And it's tragic and horrifying, the attitude that these women have toward their own children, well, at least toward their sons. It leads to all kinds of problems, psychological and cultural problems for boys. And just if I could just get back a minute ago to something you said, Chuck, about, you know, this woman, if she could find somebody willing to, to partner with her. She doesn't mention anywhere in the article whether she is married or has, or there's a father in the picture, or any kind of a male role model for this teenage boy. Now, that's not to say there isn't one, but the fact that there either isn't one or she didn't mention one is very revealing. You know, this boy needs a male role model, someone like a father or a grandfather or an uncle or some trusted adult that can serve as you know, some kind of a light post, some kind of a lighthouse, right, a beacon, you know, to pull him away from his mother's bad influence, at least in terms of her sexism, right, toward her son.
Well, you get the
feeling. But you don't hear anything about that.
Well, you get the feeling she reached her mid-30s, found out she couldn't attract too many people, and got artificially inseminated. Not unusual these days. Yeah. That's not unusual. So I have a figure. There's no father figure in there, and she was horrified when the baby came out. What do you mean it's male? What are you talking about?
Talking about male influence, we've got some comments in our chat section. Barney is saying, hey, I thought G.I. Joe beat the crap out of Ken. I guess that wasn't in the movie. Maybe this boy needs somebody to G.I. Joe's. And then Leo says, what happened to making your son watch a season of The Rifleman in black and white?
A little SEC football, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, you're right. It's because Chuck and I talk about this a lot. There is and Chuck has talked about, you know, when you watch movies, you know, anymore, it's like the women are strong and powerful and they're the heroes.
Oh, yeah.
And the men are like, you know, Bert Simpson, they're the bumbling father. I mean, even in cartoons, right? In Peppa Pig, the father is the idiot that the rest of the family puts up with. And fondly. Yeah. Of course, but you're right. There isn't, I mean, even in popular culture, and then you get something like Sound of Freedom where the man goes and rescues children.
We can't do
that. We can't do that. And even in popular culture, right, it's hard to find good examples. I mean, they're out there, but they just don't do stories about them or movies about them that much.
Yes, the impact of popular culture, it cannot be measured. It's just, it's such a powerful influence and has been for decades now. And the left knows that very well, which is why the left spent the last half century infiltrating the culture, all the different arenas of the culture, you know, education and the news media and Hollywood, because they know that controlling the culture is how you control politics and how you control the way people think and their attitudes about things. And you're right that there are that positive male role models are getting fewer and farther between in pop culture. Even, and maybe especially, down into younger, you know, shows aimed at younger audiences, like the Peppa Pig, that's one, you know. The dads are always kind of bumbling fools. Yes. The moms are the sources of wisdom and morality, if there is any morality in the show, which that's disappearing fast, too, in kids' shows. But the whole cultural push is to empower women and disempower and emasculate men. And this is going to have literally civilizational ramifications.
Well, what they're doing with the U.S. Army right now, you know, getting out the quote-unquote, which means Southern males, you know, trying to get transgenders in. Well, that's, you know, you do that for a while and see how the next war works out. Exactly. Luckily, we have Ukrainians doing all the fighting and dying.
And this from Jim. Thank God for the Hollywood writer's strike. It's like there may be.
Maybe it will force people. Maybe the writer's strike will force people to dig a little deeper and find some old shows where these woke caricatures don't exist. Right.
Well, you know, and you make some good points about the ramifications for young men. I mean, I remember years and years ago, what was it? Finding Ophelia was, it was a book about how, and this was somewhat more true, I think, when I was going to school. Yeah, when I was going to school, and I'm 65, you know, that Chuck is 25, right? Rob the Creator. Yeah. Chuck, you distracted me with that. I'm sorry. I was trying to figure out how to respond to that. I will ignore it. But, you know, the point of those kind of books were that at the time, sometimes in schools, young adolescent girls could feel marginalized because, you know, they were there. And I think this is particularly true even for my mother, right? You were supposed to go to college and find a man, blah, blah, blah. And so everybody got mm-hmm. concerned about it and they turned things around. But now we are harming and I think depressing, you know, billions of young men. And nobody is doing anything except for people like you in your column to try to turn that around and try to say to a boy, you know, it's okay. Here's a good example. When Rev, our son, was four going on five, we had a birthday party here, right? We had a bouncy castle. Now, there were boys and girls here, right? We had a bouncy castle mm-hmm. and we had a guy doing magic balloon things, right? All the boys went up to the magic balloon guy and said, can you make weapons, right? I mean, that's what they said.
Balloon weapons.
weapons. Swords, right? The girls wanted mermaids. The boy, I mean, I knew that was just what they said. He was like, can you make weapons? And the guy kindly said, sure, here's your sword, right? And the boys were happy. But I think, you know, but there is that difference. And to try to harm these young men and not acknowledge and not recognize and support them as they try to find themselves, you know, like I said earlier, that's hard enough growing up. You know, this poor kid from this mom, you just know he's going to be screwed up, right?
Yeah.
Well, you don't know. You don't know. I mean, well, I just want to go ahead and say that, you know, you said nature versus nurture. I mean, I grew up with kids who had absolutely wonderful parents and grew up in affluence and everything else, and were totally screwed up. I mean, totally screwed up and suicidal and everything else. And other people who I've known in my life have had incredible abuse when they're little kids and all the horror things, and they turned out fine. This woman, for all her evil intent, may not get her wish that he screwed up.
Yeah, you know, emasculating our children, or emasculating our sons anyway, is not the way to create the kind of culture that we want and we're looking for. I mean, what you need to do with boys and young men is channel their impulses, channel their natural masculinity toward noble and moral and honorable ends. That's what you do. You don't squelch their masculinity or try to exorcise it out of them like, you know, the Exorcist. You don't try to emasculate and feminize them. That's not going to turn them into the men you want them to be.
No.
You've got to teach them to be heroes, teach them to be defenders and protectors, because that's in their nature. Being a protector and defender is actually part of masculine nature, and that's what you want.
Right.
You know, you want to emphasize that and channel that toward the good. For the true, the good, and the beautiful. That's how you raise both your, you know, both male and female, is you channel their characters to honor and strive for the true, the good, and the beautiful. But you do that by working with their nature, not against their nature.
You know, one of the things mothers love to do and talk to their fathers, and I want my son to respect and honor women, and you got to show. There's none of that in this culture. You know, they're not told to honor and respect women. They're told to bow down before them.
Yeah.
And their nature is going to rebel to that. It's going to rebel to that. And they won't have any other model to go to their natural instincts. I think they'll just hit her.
Yes. Yeah, there's a whole angry subcurrent of young males who kind of hang out on the internet, who are fed up with this kind of feminism and this, you know, this constant attack on their nature. And it's causing a backlash in the worst way. You know, it's leading those men toward embrace their anger and their anti-feminism, and so it created a whole subcategory of men called MGTOWs, MGTOW, men going their own way, which is this kind of subculture of men who have basically just decided to give up on relationships and marriage and children, and basically only use women to the extent that they need to satisfy their own physical needs, but basically to go their own way, to just live their own lives, live for themselves. And it's a really, this is a terrible aspect of what I call the backlash against feminism. And you want to avoid that too.
Right.
So this whole feminist attitude is causing all kinds of issues with men, which are far worse than anything that feminism is supposedly fixing.
Than the Barbie movie. The thing too, I think, is it goes along with the left. Their whole thing is they keep trying to force stuff down our throats that we know to be true, that they say that there isn't, right? That there's not two genders. They try to say there are zero differences between men and women. They try to say men can breastfeed, all this kind of stuff. And I think a part of it is, and I'm curious what your thoughts are, a part of it is to get us used to shutting up about things that we know are not true, but we don't want that, the backlash against us. And I think that this is, and this attacks the family at its most basic level, really.
Yes. Well, you just raised a really big issue. There's a lot I could say about that. Let me try to run through the thumbnail sketch of it real quickly. One is that this gender ideology, which is, I think, has now become the tip of the spear of cultural Marxist assault on our civilization. Feminism, I think, for decades was kind of the tip of the spear, but now it's gone to the next level, it's gender ideology. And the purpose of that, it's a war on biology, it's a war on language. The purpose of all this gender madness is really ultimately to do what Karl Marx himself called for, and that's abolish the family. It's about eradicating the differences between male and female. It's about, deconstructing family relationships. I mean, if there's no male or female, then there can be no mother or father or son or daughter. It's really about deconstructing and eradicating the family unit. And then beyond that, this gender craziness is really also a war on truth and reality. Yeah. And the aim of that is to make truth or reality whatever the regime wants it to be. If you control the language and you redefine words in order to eradicate truth with a capital T and reality with a capital R, then you can control the way people think and act, and it leads toward a totalitarian society where people are completely controlled by words and have no agreed upon understanding of what is true and what is valid and what's real. So it's a war on the family. It's a war on reality and truth. It's about deconstructing everything we know is true and real and good and beautiful in the world.
Well, I saw on TV Neil deGrasse, who's a black astrophysicist and one of the favorite scientists.
Oh, yeah.
And he was saying, 50 years from now, they'll say, what is this about separating men and women into different sports? That's so stupid. I mean, it's obviously they should just all just mix together. And you kind of go, oh, that'll work. Yeah.
You probably never played sports.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the poor women will get crushed.
Yeah.
They may have a few,
gymnastics,
tough ones, but it's going to be just a tragedy. I mean, they always talk about Title IX, yay, which is really a disaster. But, female sports. Well, now they're going, no, let's get rid of those, which is, everybody play together. Well, okay, that means
the men will be
playing. Yeah.
These are ideas that the left comes up with that are so inane and idiotic that only intellectuals could come up with them. And I hate to say that, because, you know, at one point I was really into academia and I was very excited about the living the life of the mind and all of this, but it became something other than what I thought it was when the leftist ideologues took over the universities and schools. Their ideas are a complete repudiation of reality in the real world. But as I said before, you know, all they have to do is redefine words, redefine language, and then you begin to redefine what is true and what's not. And that's sort of their ultimate aim, is to be in control of what everybody thinks, or, you know, be in control of what everybody is allowed to believe is the truth.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, and to go to kind of, as we wrap it up here, to go back to this mom, and a part of me, I mean, I was, you know, I've had kids and I've sat in, you know, coffee shops with mom groups and at the playground with mom groups. And you just get the sense that this insufferable mother is probably sitting at Starbucks with all of her other friends, patting their backs in Cherry Creek. Yeah. Or, you know, patting themselves on their backs about how wonderful they are. You know, never mind that they're screwing up their sons, but it's like, you know, I mean, it's sort of like a competition, I think, that can happen among moms to see who can be the most, you know, woke and things like that. And they're just, it's in a way, they're no different than teenage girls trying to impress each other, right? Without any thought as to what their actions actually might result in, I think.
The consequences of the leftist utopian ideals are always negative. I mean, the left thinks that they can socially engineer a perfect world where we can eradicate poverty, we can eradicate racism and ignorance, and we can create this perfect world. And of course, those utopian dreams always turn into dystopian nightmares, because try to socially engineer perfection, very quickly you have to resort to coercion, because, you know, you have to make people be perfect. You have to force them to, you know, you can't simply, I mean, we're all broken, fallen, sinful beings. You cannot, you can't simply perfect us through human means. And I think that, you know, that's one of the big differences between conservatives and progressives. Conservatives realize that. We realize that's what we have to work with. We're imperfect, and we've got to work with that. We should always, of course, strive to better ourselves, but we're never going to be able to create a perfect utopian vision like the left dreams of. And so their ideas always lead to misery and death for others.
The left always says that you know, human beings can be perfected, and therefore we better control them
so we can
and
perfect
punish
them. Right.
And the right says beings are imperfect, but we're better off letting them live independent and stable lives. I mean, it's just such a interesting view of, okay, human beings can be perfect, so we better control everything they do
to be perfect for them. They don't care. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're going to be just fine, right? They don't care about the rest of us. They just want to control the rest of us. Meanwhile, they can go with Jeffrey Epstein to his island, right? I mean, that's all very cool. And, you know, so, hey, well, listen, Mark, we have to let you go.
Thank you so much. It's a great time. We got to have you back.
I would look forward to that. Thanks for having me.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Mark Tapson, guys. He's with David Horowitz's Freedom Center. You can read all of his columns. He's got a bunch of them up there at Front Page Magazine. We had like a lot of great comments here. This is from Barney. We watched The Rifleman and Bonanza because they had BB gun, and then we had BB gun fights, but you know, that never led to thinking about beating up or raping a woman. The fact that this woman starts out with that premise is pretty scary. This is Leo. I'm pretty sure there are very few astrophysicists who've ever been in a locker room. And then Jacob, traveling to Detroit, sitting behind me were a male couple holding their twin sons. The children about 2 age are crying for mommy. I know what's going to happen to those twin boys later on in life. Mm. And then Leo says, BB gun fights. We'd all be in foster care now, Barney. That's true. I mean, some of the stuff we did, we would be like, my parents would be arrested for. Did you guys ever have those darts? They were like giant darts that you would like throw up in the air to try to land in a circle. Only, of course, as kids, you would throw them up in the air and try to hit each other with them, right? Which fortunately were all really bad aims, so we're all still alive, but But anyway, hey, so thank you to Mark. That was great. And, and I think he's, you know, again, this woman, if you guys read his column on Front Page Magazine.
Then read her thing and
Huffington Post. And you're just like, oh my God, you know, your worst nightmare to be trapped next to her.
You might be. She's right down here in Denver.
In an airplane, right? Then put out your Trump hat. That would like sense. She probably would need to deplane or something like that. Hey, wanted to talk about something else a little bit. So Mike Lindell is sponsoring Today and Tomorrow, and you can watch it on Frank TV, franktv.com. You have to give him your email, I think, to sign in, but there, I don't think that that doesn't cost anything. But he sponsored an election summit. You know, Peg Cage is there, Anna Ferguson is there. Yep. And that one of the things they were going through was from each state, they had to give their reasons to hope. To have hope. And Ron Hanks, you know, former Senate candidate, great grassroots activist, gave the Colorado presentation. Now, apparently they had 12 minutes to give their presentation and his only took like five.
Not that much out there.
He had a press, a slideshow, you know, PowerPoint presentation, but it was like he typed it really big. There wasn't all that much to hope for, but there is that much to hope for. And he kind of outlined it well, and I think explained some of it well. So, and we'll talk about that for a little bit. If we could please play the Ron Hanks soundbite.
I can read it over here. I want to emphasize the hope. I will tell you that in the state legislature, they've got a supermajority in the House, and the Democrats do. I'm speaking as a Republican. But the grassroots for the Republican Party have elected at least two of the three state officials are grassroots conservatives. And I think that's really going to be my main point here, is as bad as our report card looked, we have grassroots that have woken up, just like, and they are calling out, like Laura Loomer suggested, Republican cowardice of the previous and current elected officials. We had an abomination for our state party officials prior to these new people being elected. There's corruption. There's a lot of money that's been lost. This is turning it around. And finally, grassroots get a chance to realize the money they give to the state party actually is going to go to candidates and not to medical bills and fraudulent and bonuses. We lost seats, Brandon, in the state house, and they gave themselves $45,000 worth of bonuses in December. I mean, that's the worst job anybody's ever done in that position, and they paid themselves bonuses.
That is one of the biggest reasons is people start to wake up, right? And the grassroots are not only waking up, they're completely seeing through the establishment politics, right? And why the establishment is trying to keep the grassroots down. And they're standing together and they're getting organized, right? And I think that is a very good reason to have hope for Colorado. You know, again, Dick Wadhams had yet another column, you know, but it's a column that no one reads. I mean, even the Denver Post, we were talking about this. They did a story about the Bonnywell Amendment, right? And of course, it was a negative story from the Denver Post. Now, there was a time if you had a story in one of the first few pages of the Denver Post, you would have been getting calls from all your friends and stuff. Nobody, right? No, I mean, even people we would consider to be politically active.
Yeah.
Because nobody reads the Denver Post. I mean, not that these people are going to be shy. Isn't that what you think?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's just it's sort of like when I lived after we moved out from New York City, New Jersey. There was no paper that covered, then there was a Newark Star Ledger, but it just covered kind of weird Newark politics. And, you know, so in suburban, and there was a Montclair Times, but that just, you know, did the high school football. But you had no information about what was going on. You had no idea there was a mayor. You had no idea who really the governor
was. City council
or anything else. And that's what it's like now. I mean, it's just, you can read the Colorado Sun or Colorado Politics or the Denver Post, but it's all the same, but it's all truncated and nobody reads the same ones. It used to be before everybody read the Denver Post and the Rocky Mountain News.
Advantage to that, I think, because it shows that they are losing their ability to control things, right? There was a time when, you know, the Bonnywell Amendment would have been smacked down, you know, by the media, and now no one even reads the media.
What's smacked down by the media? Well, but nobody reads it.
Exactly, where that would have had an impact. So that's another reason to hope that would have been complicated. But I think it is. And I think, you know, not only that, but you've got people like Mike Lindell, there is are some people with some money starting to help grassroots people get organized. I mean, that becomes the biggest thing. We saw that with the Bonnie Mohm Amendment fight just here in Colorado with the vote by the State Central Committee. The other side, the establishment rhinos, had time and money.
Pay off the College Young Republicans, pay off Joy Overbeck, pay off
Jan Cook. And I mean, so they were able to pay people to fight it. But I think the grassroots organizations, and we've seen this now, we've seen personally some people come forward. I mean, they haven't, no one's funding us, but you guys do. So we appreciate that. Yeah, yeah. But what I mean is, so there are people coming forward now and funding the grassroots efforts. And that's why we had that guy on, that Jonah Goldberg from a National Review, attacking the small donors. Like, we're going to throw small donors are a threat to democracy. It's like, we can't have small donors actually help paying for people to fight us.
You know, to finance moderation. And these,
right,
these people are contributing, making him take principal positions. You can't have that.
That's right. And from Jacob, this is from Leo. I'm starting to think we shouldn't vote for someone unless they've been indicted for something. That's absolutely true. And we'll get to that in a second too, Leo. And from Jacob, we'll see who the silent majority is in 2024.
No, you won't.
And then Leo says, yes, Julie, you never see a homeless person sleeping on the street with a My Pillow. That's right. Maybe. in Denver, you do see in the media all these homeless stories and the angst over it, where we all know how to solve it, quit building them little drug havens, and they probably, you know, arrest them. Yeah. You know, for shooting up heroin in the middle of the street, and maybe that would help solve it.
Go to San Francisco where they allow them to.
That's just me, but I thought it was kind of funny that Ron Hanks. But there is reason to hope, right? Maybe it's not like some states took more than, which is also reason to hope, right? Some states took more than their allotted time, and others did not. But I think it's, you know, the power has always lied with us, and I think people are just now starting to realize it. Don't you think?
It's all facade.
Well, that does kind of go into the next thing I wanted to talk about, and that's the Trump indictments. Yet again, you might be like, wait, it almost becomes like, you know, the first 100 indictments, no, I'm kidding about that. I mean, I read because I thought, well, I should know what they say, even right, though they're stupid. This one, I'm like, it was 90 pages. I'm like,
98 pages.
Okay. I'm like, so you just know it's stupid, so I don't bother. But one of the things that we're seeing, and again, they're not even pretending anymore. It doesn't even, they say, well, show me the man, I'll show you the crime. That's not even the truth anymore. Anymore, whether it's a crime or not, depends solely on not what you did, but who you are and what's your political ideology.
Well, what's so encouraging about this one, it's just not Donald Trump. They did 18 other Republicans, including people like Mark Meadows, who really hates Trump these days. And he's trying to move it over to federal court. But all average, you know, some are like Meadows, you know, but others are just average people in one huge conspiracy, apparently. And disputing an election is criminal if Republicans do it, but okay if Democrats do it.
And to prove your point, remember Stacey Abrams, right, who lost the election but didn't lose the election? I mean, she continues to this day to deny that she lost the election and to question the results. If we could, somebody put together a 5-minute clip, and I just pulled a portion of it. But if we could please play the Stacey Abrams soundbite.
I do have one very affirmative statement to make. We won, but I didn't lose. I got the votes. But we won't know exactly how many because of how they cheated.
I did win my election. I just didn't get to have the job.
We were robbed of an election.
She's using the word rigged, using the word steal. Do you think it's dangerous going into 2020?
I don't, because we can actually back it up.
And so in response to what I believe was a stolen election, and I'm not saying they stole it from me, they stole it from the voters in Georgia.
Guys went outside asking if I'm ever going to concede. The answer is no.
This is not a speech of concession. Because concession means to acknowledge an action is right, true, or proper. And I will not concede because the erosion of our democracy is not right.
People will be demanding. You're going to steal your election.
It was not a free and fair election. I think the election was stolen from the people of Georgia.
I believe it was stolen from the voters.
Thousands of Georgians had their voices stolen because they were not able to cast ballots. And they cannot be guaranteed that their votes will be counted in 2020 if we don't do this right.
If what happens to you happens nationally, and we see whoever wins the Democratic nominee, if they say, actually, I can prove that there's a number of votes in every state that the same thing that you just described happens in multiple states, should they concede?
I do not think we should concede an election until we know the results of an election.
I still fundamentally believed it could be fair. And that's just not how life works. If it looks like it's cheating, it probably is.
There we go.
Well, you know, the key to it all is, you know, the prosecutor would explain that that's okay because she believed it. But Donald Trump did not believe it. It's because she's decided, and therefore it's a conspiracy among all these people. I mean, a 19-person conspiracy.
Well, and as somebody points out, Mark Meadows simply asked for a phone number, right? Yes. See, and here's what's going on there, guys. What they're doing is, and that's why, I mean, I think that other indictments will have way more people too, going down to, as we saw, the maintenance guy at Mar-a-Lago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because again, it's as Trump says, they're not really after him, they're after us. And this is part of them trying to, because we're not shutting up. The grassroots are taking control. And we're asking questions. We're not supposed to ask questions. And we're not wearing our masks anymore. And we're not getting vaccinated for COVID anymore. And we don't even believe there's such a thing as long COVID. And, you know, we're not following.
I don't know. There may be.
I've read a thing said, you know, it's a,
you
well, never mind.
It, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, if I were working, I'd say I had long COVID. So anytime it was a nice day, I'm like, oh, I have long COVID again. I can't go. Just flares up constantly. But at any rate, I mean, we're not following their rules. And so they've turned the law literally into a weapon. I cracked up this morning. I was reading that the headline in The Hill was Trump is going to weaponize the indictment against him. I'm like, Trump is going to weaponize? So they weaponized the legal system, and now Trump's going to weaponize their weaponization, and that's bad. I mean, that's how ridiculous they are. But they're going to start going after all kinds of people, right?
And until Republicans start doing it, they'll continue.
Right.
And I think Dershowitz said, well, we can indict Jack Smith, the prosecutor, for violation of the KKK Act. Well, somebody ought to do it. You know, somebody ought to do it. And somebody, you know, you just can't always be passive. And of course, some people are in on the on.
Right. I was going to say, here's the reason, the real reason.
Governor Jack Kemp, the Secretary Rosenberger. I mean, they're just all really pretended to be Republicans and got elected, and they're just as evil as the Democrats.
Well, and anyone at this point who, you know, who's saying, oh, well, you know, the indictments are fair. I mean, number one, or, you know, there was no, the election was totally fair. We have the gold standard election in Colorado. It's just, right. It's just, they're just a liar, right? I mean, and they know they're a liar. The problem is the reason they're doing it, and the reason the Democrat or the Republican district attorneys and attorney generals are not filing charges, I think, is because many of them are part of the Uniparty, right? Because it's not really Republicans and Democrats anymore. It's grassroots versus Democrats and establishment rhinos, right? Because the Democrats and the establishment rhinos are ultimately on the same side,
right.
Essentially united against us, right? The enemy of my enemy
middle
is my friend,
class.
Right? Middle class Americans. And if they have to throw us in jail, they'll let the Democrats throw us in jail. And then they'll turn around and say, well, they must have done something wrong, or we'll let the system play out,
right? I believe in the system.
Right. And then the more they do this, and this is what kind of worries me, worries me a lot, actually, because they're not even trying to hide it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they posted the indictment before the grand jury met, right? So
the clerk who looks like Stacey Abrams, I said, you know, I'm human. I just hit the wrong button.
Well, what, 5 hours?
Yeah, no problem.
It's a 98-page indictment. I mean, you couldn't even read it. Well, you could, I guess. But I mean, it's a 90-page indictment with 19 people, and they presented their entire case in 5 hours. Is that, that's right? Right? They did it all. That's impossible, right?
Yeah, so it's. Where there's a will, there's a way.
If it's not fair. So they're not even pretending to be fair. They indict, like you said, Mark Meadows, literally, apparently the totality of his alleged crime was asking for a couple of phone numbers of some other congressional representatives, right? So, that's a conspiracy. So they're not even pretending. And I worry that the reason they're not pretending is that they know, they believe they've got the system to a point where voters actually don't matter anymore.
The
where where the true democracy, the ballot collection yes. matters more than the ballot casting,
right?
And I worry that they feel like they have that so mastered and they have that so in the bag right now.
Probably do
that. You know, they can do whatever they want. And so, you know, back to kind of wrap it up, or not wrap it up, but tie it back to Mike Lindell's election summit. That's great, and we need to do that. But I kind of, you know, you look at the RNC, Ronna McDaniel, I don't think is launching, you know, 1,000 mules, or maybe not illegally, but you know what I mean? It's like, what, the Republicans are not doing near enough, I don't think, on that front.
No, they're not. It would cost hundreds of millions, and just too little, too late, like they always do.
Well, and again, because many of them still benefit, right? Leo says he's going to sell t-shirts with Trump's face on a ham sandwich. And then Jim Jackson, if we had a truly representative government, the Republicans in Congress would shut it all down until these third world persecutions stop. Exactly. They Leo says, good point. And then McCarthy can defund the rogue agencies, says Charlene. Yeah. And then he doesn't. And so you have to say, why doesn't he? And then you watch Ken Buck kind of go back and forth. You know, I don't know if he just puts his finger in the wind and sees, but earlier he was saying,
I just think he has electrical impulses at this. Just kind of,
and he says one day he says a rhino thing.
Voting gold standard.
But when he said, you know what, well, he didn't see how he could support somebody for president who'd been indicted, right? And then all of a sudden, not today or yesterday, he's talking about the indictments being a sham. It's like, that should bear something with it, right? If it's a completely political persecution, you know, you wouldn't say, you know, some of that, like, you know, Nelson Mandela. Well, he must have done something wrong, or they wouldn't be persecuting him, right? You know, and the left is worried, but not that worried. I think they want Trump to be the nominee, but I don't think they even really care that much, right? I mean, I don't think they care. I know you read things about Joe Biden isn't going to be the nominee. I bet he is.
Well,
because it doesn't matter.
Maybe, you know, that German Shepherd.
It bites too many Secret Service guys.
Well, it doesn't matter. Keep him down the basement like Joe.
Right. But I think, though, again, for reason to hope, there are states that are waking up. I mean, and even in Colorado, the Tom Fitton organization, Judicial Watch, has filed suits against the Colorado Secretary of State. I think a big issue and a big solution is really not all that complicated, and that is cleaning out the voter rolls. Well, and you can do that by matching addresses. I mean, it's not easy, but I mean,
It's not going to.
Well, it's happening in some states.
Well,
I mean, some of the states have gotten rid of the ERIC system and things like that.
Well, yeah. Well, Judicial Watch, I think we've had loves the ERIC system, which I always found strange.
J. Christian Adams.
Yeah, J. Christian Adams loved the ERIC system. I think he loved the ERIC.
Likes the idea of it.
He liked it.
Because they've sued over it. But at any rate.
And they get their attorney's fees.
And the ERIC system is originally Soros funded data collection system that basically collects all of the information for voters for the Secretary of State's office. So if you think Jenna Griswold and the Colorado Secretary of State's office is the one that's kind of processing the voter registrations, that's kind of cleaning them out, that's saying, well, this person is dead, this person doesn't even live in Colorado anymore, this person is registered under 5 different, you know, names, it's the same person, you know, we've got ballots going to a teeny apartment and 400 ballots going, or all of these ballots are going to a homeless shelter, that doesn't seem right. They're not, right? All of that's being controlled by this ERIC system, which is a Democrat thing, and they're not cleaning any of them out.
ERIC was really set up to make sure that people weren't voting in different jurisdictions. So Joe Blow couldn't be vote in Colorado because he went to CU and also in New Jersey and all that. But it became just another thing they could weaponize and turn to their own purposes.
Right. That's like Donald Trump was going to weaponize the weaponized indictment against him. What a joke. Donald Trump is going to weaponize the indictment. It's like, yeah, I hope so. I think it's time Republicans started weaponizing stuff ourselves. Hello.
Well, it's hilarious to read the sometimes called the mainstream media. I mean, on any subject, Iran, Ukraine, Richmond from Richmond. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, and it's all clearly false. I mean, it's clearly false. It's not even close. It's not an opinion. It's just bullshit. I mean, it's just endless bullshit. And they're happy to.
Right.
You know, I mean, the Ukraine war is going great. Just, you know, Ukrainians are dying at enormous rates, which is wonderful for everybody. And who knows?
for the, well, and this from Jacob. And Jacob, I did read that article. In the article I sent you, there was a paragraph that explained how the voting machines were connected through the internet. Well, and I even think the CISA, the government agencies, determined all of that too. And I mean, that's just a joke, right? When they say, oh no, they can't hack into these, you're like, you know, there's a 12-year-old sitting in a basement somewhere who can hack into anything. It's like to try to tell people, you know, you read constantly about all these secure systems that are getting hacked into and they have all your information. And you're like, what? The Colorado Secretary of State, you know, people hack into the DMV all the time. Right, so, I mean, people, but they don't want us asking any questions, which, I mean, you got to wonder, I don't know if you guys heard Apple and iTunes pulled all of Glenn Beck's podcasts down today. It's like, so it's gearing up, you know, they're gearing up for 2024. And later, one of these days, I'm going to have time. I'm going to explain the new thing we need to watch out for, the new COVID, so to speak. It's going to be climate emergency. I keep reading these articles and I'm not even seeking them out. I'm just, they're coming upon them in the mainstream, so to speak, media about how we're not paying enough attention to how much extreme heat is killing people. It is the main cause of death in California.
Did you listen to Jeff Podesta? They brought him in today to describe how the fires in Maui were caused by climate change. You go, really? Right. Yeah. Okay, Jeff. Well,
there you go. And they're going to start pretty soon. They're going to start cracking down on anybody who challenges anything like that. There's going to be I'm serious here. There's going to be a climate emergency, and we all have to stay inside, even in the winter, because of the extreme heat. Yeah. That's right. And to top it off, there are going to be a ton of non-governmental organizations
getting
our tax dollar money to help those programs. Yeah, so, hey, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Our thanks to Mark Tapson.
And yeah, he was just great.
All of you guys on Zoom, we love your comments. And on Friday, speaking of rhinos, Todd Watkins was at a grassroots guy, was at a meeting.
Yeah, glad you cleared that. Talking about rhinos.
Yeah, that's right. I meant it was Barb Kirkmeyer, I was going to say. She was at a meeting where she was explaining that the reason she was opposed to opting out of the open primary is because if we do that, she knows she'll never win. It's like, well, that's a good reason, I guess, if you're her. But yeah, we're going to have her, and we're going to try to get Peg Cage and Anna Ferguson, who are at the...
is a man.
Todd Watkins is a man. And then I said,
never mind.
Okay. We're going to try to get Peg Cage and Anna Ferguson on there at the Mike Lindell Summit.
Yeah, that'll be great.
They'll hear from them too. So that'll do it for us.
Thank you, everybody. We appreciate you.
We'll see you.
See you Friday.